From JetBooks, this is Irish Business Builders, a show about great Irish businesses and the people who built them. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping.
It's always the pathway always for me for business. It's something I've always been passionate about it, and I've always wanted to own my own business. So for me, it was a no-brainer, and I never thought twice about it.
I'm Conor Carney, and that's the voice of Philip McGlade, CEO at Therapy Clinics, Europe's number one aesthetic clinic with over 65 locations in Ireland, the UK, and now India. The group also includes Optolase, the largest provider of laser eye surgery in Ireland, with 10 clinics nationwide. Philip's dad, who had originally founded and run the well-known retail chain Champion Sports, founded Therapy Clinics in 2002. Philip joined the business in his early 20s and became CEO within 6 months. In this chat, Philip talks about what he learned growing up around the family business, why he saw huge potential in the recession, and how they've grown Therapy Clinics from a single location focused on massages and facials to a multinational business with even bigger ambitions. I started off by asking Philip to tell me about how he got started with Therapy Clinics.
Therapy is firstly a family-run business. It was set up by my father in 2002, so 20 years ago. So my dad he owned Champion Sports, the retail stores, and on the side, he used to love getting massages. So as a side gig, he said, I'll open up Therapy originally so we can get a massage. That was kind of the start of Therapy, but my dad was never really passionate about it. He's a real retailer. He likes going into kind of environments where he can talk to the customers. Whereas in a business like Therapy, a lot of the customers are in treatment rooms. So he never just had the passion to grow the business. So I got involved in business in 2009. The plan for me was to get into investment banking. At the time, we had the financial crisis, and then there wasn't much jobs in investment banking. So my dad invited me to, why don't you take over, come into the business? So I came in originally as marketing, and then within 6 months, I was running the business. So it was a bit, I think at the time, around 22, probably young, naive, didn't know what I was doing, definitely didn't know what I was doing. I just saw an opportunity for growth and said, let's grow. And obviously at the time, Ireland was going through the big recession. And for me, anytime there's a recession, that's when there's opportunities. So there's a lot of good opportunities from a retail perspective and rents. So we just kind of started to expand, and thankfully it kind of went well, and then we just grew and grew each year and year.
How many locations did you have at that stage?
At that time, there's only one.
Right, okay. So you were joining a very small business at that stage.
Yeah.
And did you, coming into it, did you have ideas for the business? Did you... You said your dad didn't really have a passion for this side. Did you feel that you could have a passion for it, or was it just...
I was always passionate about business. We're kind of very entrepreneurial and business-orientated family. Every Sunday when we meet up, we're talking business. Every day we're talking business. So for me, it's always the pathway always for me for business. It's something I've always been passionate about it, and I've always wanted to own my own business. So for me, it was a no-brainer. And never thought twice about it.
So in terms of the growth then, so you're how many locations today?
So we've got 65 therapy clinics in the UK, Ireland and India. We got one Therapy for Tiddly, and we got 10 Optolase clinics in Ireland. So yes, we employ over 1,200 people. So when I came on board, we probably had like 5 or 6 people. So we've gone from 5 to 6 to 1,200. So yeah, it's been a big transition.
What do you think are the key things that happened during that time? So I suppose you said yourself, you kind of started in a recession, so you had, benefit of kind of lower rents and things like that. What else has kind of been a tailwind during that time?
I think we've been very fortunate in the kind of the growth in our sector. I think in the last kind of couple of years, we've seen massive growth within our sector. So I think we've been fortunate about that. We've leveraged off that. As I said, we kind of always knew this sector was going to grow, and there's no one doing what we kind of done beforehand. Traditionally in our sectors, there's mom and papa stores, and the second thing, there's no one who's bringing to the high street, and bring it to high street accessible price point. So I always knew we had a USP over the whole market. So yeah, I think that's something we've kind of worked in our favor.
You've kind of grown the services. So yeah. Obviously Optilays and I'm sure the services within therapy clinics have grown as well. What were you doing just very first day? What was the service being?
So firstly, the business has really evolved. I said my father first started, he was doing massages and facials. And then when I kind of came involved in the business, I kind of got rid of all that. I kind of simplified the menu. We kind of focus on areas such as laser hair removal and Botox. And kind of said, let's be the specialists in these areas and be the best in what we do. So at the start, we kind of put razor focus on being the best in that. And over the last kind of couple of years, we kind of evolved the business and kind of had a more diverse product offering. You know, last year we launched Therapy Fertility. We're now in the fertility space. We've kind of introduced new services and therapies such as body sculpting treatments. So we kind of expanded our portfolio over the years.
So what was it that made you decide to focus on Botox and laser hair removal?
Well, firstly, it's very hard to kind of make money just doing massages. You know, you're getting like a revenue of 80 quid per hour and then you've got all the fixed costs of your rent rate. So it's very hard to make money. Whereas in services like Botox and fillers, firstly, I really like Botox as a product because the client has to come back. The client has to come back every couple of months. So you have a good lifetime value. And for me, for business, is always looking as going into areas where the client or the patient has to come back repeatedly. So you're not chasing new clients all the time. So that's what I really like about laser hair removal and for Botox, that you've got a good lifetime value.
So when you started out, you were 22, how much of this have you kind of learned over time? And how much of it do you think was in your head day one?
I think I was fortunate, I said, when I was younger, when I spent time with dad, it was going around sports shops. It was going to meetings with him. So I think I started probably around 5 years old, earlier year. I think I started my first business at 5 years old. So I always had, I've always been in business, but I'm always learning. You're always learning all the stuff. So obviously when I first got involved, if I was honest, I didn't know much. But I think as I was thrown in the deep end, I was forced. It's either die or so. I think with that kind of mindset, I was forced to learn very quick. And then obviously, I'm a big reader. I'm reading all the time. For me, it's all about, we have a philosophy in therapy, Kaizen, which means continuous improvement. So every day looking to make an improvement, whether that be learning something new, whatever we do, just making an improvement every day in our lives.
Talk to me a little bit about the time where, you know, before you joined therapy and I suppose your upbringing and, you know, going around to sports shops and things like that. Because some people whose parents are, you know, in business or business people, but they don't get a huge amount of exposure to it. Did you get a lot of exposure?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, our father was literally, from the day we were born, was talking businesses. And, like, my dad was a workaholic, still is a workaholic. And as I said, my parents, they split when we were young, and when our dad had us on the weekends, the time was going around to all the sports stores, going to meetings with him. So I was exposed to business at a very young age. And then I said, on the weekends, I meet all my dad and his friends, and they were all business friends. So it's constantly learning business. And you don't realize you're learning, but you are learning. Mm-hmm. So I think that definitely benefited me massively, being exposed so young to business.
Can you think of anything that you've taken that you remember from your childhood when you said, I actually learned that when I was young? You know, what I do now is actually something I picked up from that.
I can't really think of experiences, but definitely I picked up stuff that I probably don't realize. Mm. It's if you surround yourself so much with so many people, you're going to pick up habits.
Yeah.
So I definitely picked up habits. I just don't realize them. So, whether they're good or bad is another thing.
So Optilays is a part of it. Yep. Are you growing that side of the business?
Yeah. So Optilays, we're the largest provider of laser eye surgery in Ireland. We're now kind of evolving that business. We're getting into cataract surgery, intraocular lens. Our plan is to go after the government contracts. In Ireland, there's a 4-year waiting list for a cataract. So that's the next thing we're going to be going after. So we're building a state-of-the-art facility out in Carrigmines, 10,000 square feet. And our plan is to kind of start offering cataracts, doing the public work and private work, and also offering new additional treatments. So that's a business that we're seeing massive growth, and we plan to roll that out worldwide as well, in addition to therapy.
If you think about Optilase therapy, yeah, and the fertility side of the, yeah, business, and even the software side, we'll talk about now in a few minutes too, how is it that you kind of come across these things? And do you test them first to make sure that they're right before going to build massive areas?
Like, yeah, well, yeah, definitely it's tests. So, for example, obviously the Optilase business, we've been open now, yes, 17 years, so we're very established. One of the reasons why we're getting into kind of cataract things is, firstly, we're seeing massive demand because a lot of these customers don't want to wait 4 years. So we're seeing massive demand for that. So that's part of the reason. If I go back then to the fertility, fertility is a market I've been looking at for the 5 years. I've always kind of been intrigued why fertility was so expensive. And when I did my kind of market analysis, I saw that every fertility clinic in Ireland was making money. And that should not be the case in every sector, because there's good players and there's bad players. And if you found this, well, I was just intrigued that everyone was making money. So that for me was a big eye opener. And then obviously we opened up in Carrick Mines, and that's been a huge success. And now our plan is to roll out that concept. So we're probably going to open an additional 4 clinics in the next 12 months in Ireland for the fertility, with a plan then rolling out in the UK in the next 2 years.
So what are the treatments and services that the fertility...
So we specialise in treatments such as IVF and treatments like egg freezing. So that's what we really focus on and there.
When you started in therapy day one, okay, with... in the marketing department, and I'm, yeah, sure maybe there was there someone else running the business at that stage?
Yeah, we had kind of a person in charge of finance who's kind of running the business at the same time. Mm-hmm. But she was kind of in between both sides, so she wasn't fully committed.
Mm. Did you think this could be, you know, I don't know if it's come as a surprise as such, like if you look back now, kind of, whatever, it's been 13 years or something like that.
Yeah.
Did you have an idea in your mind that this could actually be big and that you could do it?
Yes. I think when I first started, you know, firstly, I was 22. I had exposure to my dad in business, but never had dealt with like managing people myself. So that was a kind of a rude awakening for me. And there was a time at the start I questioned myself, you know, like everyone does. But then after a while, I kind of start getting a bit of self-belief. I'm a very kind of fortunate person. I have huge self-belief in everything I do. I believe that if I put my mind to anything, I can do anything. I have that inner belief in myself. So, yeah, I've always thought this, we could be massive. I've never doubted that.
And when you doubted yourself, you know, at the start, what was it, do you think? So, obviously, you have a natural kind of self-belief, but yes, did you have things along the way? Was there any markers that you can remember that you went, oh, actually, you know, we can definitely do this now? I believe it.
Yeah, it took me a few years, I said, when I started. It took me a few years to find that jig and get into that rhythm. And, you know, as I said, I did doubt myself a lot of times, go, I'm not the person. But I kept at it, I kept persistent. And then I suppose, for me, what really got confidence is then I built a team around me, you know, because, and that's when I kind of got the belief, we can do it. The team are ready. I'm ready. The business is ready. Let's grow.
I suppose building the team and kind of getting the right people around you, yeah, is that a steep learning curve at the start?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like you read all the books, get the right people, and, you know, so it's a cliche, but it's so true. Mm-hmm. And I think for me is, you know, I've gone through loads of good people, bad people. And as you get kind of older and more experienced, you kind of realize what type of people. I think what was very good, what exercise we did a few years ago, it really kind of helped in kind of in a recruitment was, what are our values? What are our values as a business? And from the values of a business, we kind of found the people that be most suitable for our business. So I think that was probably one of the best exercises we did, because there's no point in having one of the smartest person in the world and having not aligned with you, with your values. It's not going to work. So I think is getting everyone on the ship that is aligned with similar values was the kind of is key.
Did you have a consultant in to do that,
yeah,
exercise?
Yeah.
And so what, if you can remember them off, yep, the top of your, yep, head, what are the values, yep, and how do you kind of test for that?
Yeah, so we've 3 values. One, hungry. We want people hungry. I said, we want to grow as a business. Mm-hmm. We're very ambitious. We want to go worldwide. We want people who are ambitious and hungry. Second is zesty. We want people who have a bit of fun, a bit of character, that, you know, thinks outside the traditional rules. Mm-hmm. And then so hungry, zesty, and inspiring.
Yeah. And is it when do you test that in an interview? You want to ask questions so see what kind of answers?
Yeah, we ask them kind of what questions, you know, and then we fall back at the end. We say, are they hungry? Are they zesty? Are they inspiring? Mm. And that's how we know if there's a culture fit or not.
Yeah. It's actually, I've heard the same thing from a number of people now through the podcast and just in general kind of reading and everything, is that point where they decided who they were and what their values were, it made it so much easier then to pick the people who could, you know, help them do what they wanted to do.
I think we should do that in a kind of personal relationship as well. Mm. As a person, you should decide what are your personal values and is your partner aligned with them values. Mm. I think you can apply that to, you know, other ways in life.
So tell me about, because I only saw today that you have a number of locations in India.
Yeah.
How did you decide? It's not, I mean, the UK, yep. I can understand. Yeah, everyone in Ireland is I'm just going to grow the UK now. How did you end up in India?
Well, like, we've kind of done a lot of property transactions over there. My brother had a hotel over there. So we've had exposure to India. And obviously India is 1 billion people. It's a massive market. So that was kind of part of the rationale of why we looked at India.
What have been the difficulties there? I mean, those are all great things, like a billion people.
Yeah.
But what is it, you know, what? I mean, I've heard it's very difficult to get from one location to the next and all the rest of it. So what have been the challenges?
India, obviously, massive country, but you're right, there's a lot of challenges doing business in India. I think, firstly, the staff. I think it's very hard to find competent, good staff in India, because as a nation, you know, only a certain percentage of their kind of economy are educated. Mm-hmm. So there's factors like that make it very challenging to scale as a business. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the drawbacks in India, massive opportunity, but it's a very hard market to scale a business.
Are you focusing on India as a business, and is it something you want to grow further?
It's something where we want to grow further. I think we'd look at other markets that are easier to scale. Mm-hmm. You know, the US is one market that we really want to get into soon. So we'd probably kind of focus on a market like the US ahead of India, if I'm honest.
So looking at something like the US, all I think about there is, wow, there must be so much competition there, you know, very people that are also very good at what they do and everything else. How do you think about those new markets?
Yeah, well, firstly, the US is the biggest market in the world in our sector. I think it makes up 40-50% of the entire market. So if you're not looking at the US, there's something wrong, you know? And so for us, yes, the US, because it's such a big market, it's more competitive. But we kind of assess the market and we think there still is an opportunity there. And we kind of have certain USPs that we can stand apart from the pack.
Mm. Well, I suppose a lot of your business would be kind of location dependent as well, you know, which helps certainly if you're you can see what places might be underserved and so on.
Yeah, well, I think the good thing about our type of business, obviously online is affecting retail, but it's not affecting really our business, because you can't buy our services online. You have to come in the store. Mm. So I think that leaves an opportunity in our sector, because retail is, rent and rates are coming down. Like, that's one of the reasons why we're so focused on the UK, because rents have probably come down 60-70% in the last couple of years. So it leaves massive opportunity for business like us to expand at good commercial terms.
I suppose retail is dying in a way, and kind of these, so something like therapy is kind of more a kind of new high street, you know, something with a bit more potential and things like that.
Yeah, well, I think the high street is going to be changed. What you're going to find in the future in shopping centres is businesses such as therapy and other kind of medical use businesses. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see the hospital type businesses in the shopping centres as well. I think the shopping centres have a challenge in keeping people within, and they need businesses like a therapy that can attract footfall in. So that's how I see the kind of the future retail. It's going to change. It's going to more dental practices, more medical practices coming into these high street premises.
This podcast is produced by JetBooks. an online bookkeeping service dedicated to giving you real-time financial information at the click of a button. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping.
How has your day-to-day and kind of weekly role changed over time? I suppose now you've got a team of people, so you probably have to do less doing and more kind of strategic thinking. But I don't want to put words in your mouth. How is that? How is your kind of evolution being as a CEO?
Yeah, my evolution from my first startup was doing everything, the marketing, the finance, similar to probably yourself. You do a bit of everything. And as the business grows, and if you want to scale, you can't do everything. You need specialists. So, like, as I said, it's nearly like, you know, my evolution business, you start off in the third division, then you go to the second division, then you go to the first division, then you go to the Champions League. And on that kind of that phase, you need different people, because the people who worked you in the third division, they aren't going to get you the Champions Leagues. So you have to begin getting the right players first as you go to then division. So I think what I've been kind of doing is identifying who are the star players. We want to go to Champions League. We need star players. So I kind of, over the last kind of 2 years especially, we kind of really kind of upped our kind of people. We brought in a new CFO, Jer. Jer worked in a public listed company. He floated at the time at Glenveagh, where they raised $600 million. So he went through all that process. Then Danny, who's our chief marketing officer, worked in Ryanair. She was the head of digital in Ryanair. She's sending 3 billion emails a year. So she expanded the kind of the marketing team in Ryanair from 1 to 100. She came involved. Then Keith, who's our chief product officer, he was the director of EY. He's kind of used to kind of processes, and kind of he's coming in, putting all the processes for scaling of our business. So we've kind of brought various people like that who've worked in big size businesses and bring that kind of that big size mindset to our business.
Do you do that first, and then evolve into what you into the next league, I suppose, as you put it?
Yeah, well, I think as a business, we're 100% family owned business, so we kind of have funded our growth through the business kind of profits. So you can't do all in once, you know. So it's kind of phased approach, depending on the needs of the business. But for me, like, we've obviously expanded a lot, but over the last few years, before we went crazy in our expansion, I said we need to get the people first. And the kind of how I kind of tell our guys, the three pillars what we need for our growth: firstly the people, then the process, and then the systems. So we've kind of done that over the last 3 years, got the people in place, looked at our processes and our systems.
Where have you come to kind of understand all this? Are you involved with Enterprise Ireland and programs there? Or is it kind of, do you have external coaches or anything like that to help you?
Funny, actually, Enterprise Ireland actually reached out to me there. So we're going to chat to them. But in regard to kind of coaches, we beefed up our kind of board. We brought in Andy McHugh, who is former CEO of Flutter. Obviously, Flutter is the largest company, public listed company in Ireland. So obviously, he's our chairman of a group. So obviously, we brought in people like that who've got experience in kind of to kind of help the business, help me, help our team around. Obviously, my dad's very kind of proactive in kind of chatting to me about the business, and, you know, I have a lot of friends who are in business as well. So, you know, constantly learning, constantly trying to improve.
Do you have goals for the business? Obviously, you're always trying to grow, but do you have specific targets that you're trying to hit?
Yeah, yeah.
And how does that process, how do you kind of set the goals for the business?
So at the moment, I just sat down with our CFO, Jer, on setting our 5-year strategy for the business. So obviously, we put goals the next 5 years, and that's measured on a yearly basis, quarterly basis. So really, for us, the goal is we want to be the biggest in the world. You know, as we always say internally, the therapy takeover, we want to take over the world. You know, and that's the kind of, everyone in our business is aligned. And, you know, the plan of the next couple of years, we probably will go public. We want to hit a certain size and scale, and then probably float.
I would have no idea how big the biggest in the world would be, you know, in your industry. Yep. What kind of level would you be talking about at that stage?
We'd like to get up to, you know, a couple of billion turnover is kind of the aim in the next couple of years. You know, and yeah, a couple of hundred million EBITDA is kind of what our aim is the next kind of couple of years.
The plan, I suppose, is to kind of get to a certain scale and have everything in place, and then float to kind of on the next kind of phase, yeah, if you like.
Yeah, I think for us is, yes, getting a certain scale, we need to go to the US. Okay, if we do float, we'd probably like to do it in the US. So it's kind of, but we have a lot of work to do before that. So it's kind of getting that scale, getting the right people in place, the right technology in place, with a view to going public eventually.
What does your day and week look like as a CEO? Are you doing a lot of traveling? Or is it kind of meetings? What does that look like?
Yeah, so obviously with COVID, I used to do a lot of traveling, probably going to go back to doing traveling now things are kind of open up. But obviously the UK is 70% of our business at the moment. And we're doing a mass rollout there. So I'm going to probably spend 2 to 3 days a week in the UK, typically. And then I'd have 2 days in Ireland. And that'd be kind of meeting with all the kind of our leadership team, the various team, or CFO, or our chief marketing officers, and this chief operating officer as well. So yeah, that would kind of consist. And like, I always like to have a bit of free time on a Fridays, particularly, just where I just think. And to think about the future, do research, read, probably do around 4 or 5 hours reading on a Friday. So Friday is my kind of DOS day, whereas I use as a think day.
So, and is that, what does that look like? Do you go into the office, or do you take time out?
Yeah, go into the office maybe for a few hours, maybe read at home. So it's really, I don't like to have my Fridays real structured. All rest of my week is very structured and kind of, but Fridays I like to have unstructured because I find it more creative then.
Yeah. And so when you're talking, so for the rest of the week then, are those, you have, let's say, a finance meeting with the CFO and you get an update based on kind of the goals for that quarter or whatever it might be? Is that kind of how it looks?
Yeah. So as I said, what we call a Z meeting every Monday with our leadership team. Each department reports how to get against their budget. So whether it be finance, or it be operation reports against their daily targets or weekly targets, marketing reporting. So I kind of spend time in each department, seeing how they're tracking against everything. And then I like to visit some of our stores, talk to our customers, talk to our staff, you know. So yeah, it's a kind of a mix.
As a leader of the business, because the intensity as such, ever get up to where you're kind of in a you're kind of giving out to people on the team or anything like that, or is it the fact now that everyone is kind of rowing in the one direction that you don't kind of need to do that?
I'm not the type of person who gives out. First off, I think pressure. I like pressure. I think putting a bit of pressure on a team is good. I think pressure is good. So for me, I think everyone needs to be aligned. Like the type of people that I work with and work on me, they like a bit of pressure. They like intensity, you know, because we want to be the best. And if you want to be the best in anything, you got to do, you got to deal with shit. You got to want pressure. You know, pressure is good, as I always tell my team.
So there's kind of a general sense of everyone is kind of going towards the one goal.
Everyone wants it.
Yeah.
You know, we all want to win. So, and I said, you know, part of the rationale, our leadership team, they all have shares in the business. So it's in their interest.
Mm. When someone joins the business, does it take long for them to maybe get that kind of ownership stake in the business? Do they have to work for it? What I suppose for the senior level staff, how is it that you kind of get them on board day one, and how is it that you test whether they're...
I like, firstly, like people to get their hands dirty, you know, because I'm the kind of person, if needs to be, I'll get my hands dirty. So I like people have, you know, sometimes I find that people come from maybe big corporate companies. They're used to everyone doing everything for them. And they come to a company like us where suddenly they don't have unlimited resources and people. You know, they have to do certain things themselves. So that's something we kind of condition from day one. You know, you need to get your hands dirty here. I think that's part of our ethos as a company as well. And you know, I think that's very important.
What would an example of kind of getting your hands dirty be, maybe in a situation?
Well, let's just say like a certain person, I'm not going to name who, started our organization from a big company where she was used to loads of different people doing her job, where there's some from doing a report, where when she came on board and us, she had to do that report herself. And she wasn't used to that. And that was a bit of a cultural shock for her. So that's one example.
Yeah. So talk to me a little bit then about fertility.
Yep.
Back to fertility. What are the you're kind of excited about yep. that section of the business. Yep. Is that something you're going to grow
yep.
into the US, and is that something you're going to take with you with you know, everything else, later heroin and so on?
I think out of all our businesses, that's probably the one area of our business I'm personally most excited about, because it's a sector that we can really disrupt. But for example, in Ireland, we come in with a very disruptive model. Traditionally, fertility in Ireland has been very expensive. Over 50% of people in Ireland before therapy fertility opened were going abroad to have their fertility. And one of the reasons why this was, because of price. So when I kind of did our research into the kind of fertility sector, I just didn't understand why it was so expensive. I questioned, why is this so expensive? This is becoming a mass product. This should not be that expensive. So when we launched, we are 50% cheaper than everyone else in the market. And we don't compromise on the quality. We still offer the best quality. We've got the best medical director, Dr. John Kennedy. We've got the best team of embryologists, nurses. And yet we're still able to offer a product 50% cheaper than our competition.
Have you gone into any treatments or services, you know, throughout your time with the business that didn't work out and you decided to kind of back out?
Yeah, 100%. A few years ago, we tried hair restoration. So obviously I saw hair transplant as a big business, and we got into it, and it wasn't very successful. And one of the reasons why it wasn't very successful, because I felt our price point wasn't accessible enough for the mass market. We were charging 5,000-6,000. Not everyone had 5,000-6,000. And we just weren't getting the kind of scale we needed to make it viable.
Mm-hmm.
So after around 2 years, we pulled out of that.
Right.
So,
yeah.
But massive learning.
But even 5,000-6,000 is very much more affordable, obviously, for someone who wants that treatment.
Yeah. Obviously, at the time, one reason why we looked at that, I saw BlackRock Clinic hair restoration. BlackRock, they're getting 20,000. I said, and they're out the door. So it's like, well, let's make it more affordable.
Mm.
But we just didn't get the scale we needed. We did. Big numbers, but that's not big enough to make it viable.
Yeah. I suppose maybe in that situation, you'd have to have more treatments in a day or something to make it viable.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. So is there anything else that, I don't know, not kind of thing as such, but is there anything else that you do, you looked at fertility, for example, for 5 years, and you've looked at other markets for a long time. Is there anything you think about? Is there any kind of recurring thoughts that you go, God, that might be something I can see us getting into in the future?
I'm very interested in medical. I think, especially COVID and before, we're getting more conscious in our eating behavior, our health. So I think is the future. Everyone's getting more health conscious. So I'd like kind of therapy to go in that more direction. You know, we've massively evolved our business from starting aesthetics to now doing fertility to doing eyes. And we like to continue that involvement, but really focus on around healthcare and medical.
And do you know, or do you have an idea as to kind of what areas in?
Yeah, there's a few areas I'm interested in. I'm interested in diagnostics, you know, like my sister had an issue there the other week. She wanted to get a scan and she was told she had to wait 3 months. And I just don't understand why if you have to wait 3 months.
Mm.
So that's something we might explore in the future. But yeah, we're definitely interested in exploring new areas.
You mentioned earlier on that Friday is your kind of unstructured day and then you've got more structured week. What does your kind of personal time outside of work look like? And do you think about that and do you invest in that as a way to improve the work life?
I'm not going to lie, I'm terrible at it. I'm obsessed at work, which is not good because it's not sustainable. So it's something I'm kind of working on. I'm doing meditation or trying to do meditation. I'm trying to kind of not look at my phone constantly because I'm kind of... So yeah, it's something I need to improve on because you need a balance.
What about exercise?
Oh yeah, I do a lot of exercise. I'd run a lot. I go to gym a couple of times a week. So yeah, I'm very interested in fitness. I think I perform better when I'm fit.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, fitness is very important for me.
Do you block out the time for that?
Yeah, I normally do in the morning times, 5:30 in the mornings. I generally get up and go to the gym or go for a run.
What about holidays and things like that?
Yeah, holidays. I go regularly, go to Spain, go to Portugal a good bit. I like my holidays, but at the same time, they're not your typical holidays. I'd be still working, which is my problem. So,
Do you think it helps getting away?
Yeah, definitely. I think you need to, especially sunshine. I think it relaxes your brain. So yeah, going away is critical. I need to. That's probably what I need to do more.
When you said just about it not being sustainable, have you learned that the hard way in any way? Not that you've had a breakdown, but do you think you've hit a point where you've been burnt out and things like that?
Well, I think if you're going 140 miles an hour every day, you're going to hit a point where, so I think, you know, especially over COVID, I think it was more stressful for everyone and kind of everyone had more time to kind of look at themselves. So I probably have looked at myself and I go, this isn't sustainable what I'm doing. I need to make change. So I'm in that process at the moment.
Do you have people that would help you with that side of the thinking as well? I suppose your kind of personal and self-management as well as the kind of maybe technical business things.
At some point probably I am going to look at is getting a bit of outside help in that, because it is a challenge for me to switch off and I probably need some help in that.
Do you think that maybe sometimes people who can't switch off, they do tend to get a lot more done? I don't know if I'm convinced fully from seeing, from talking to business people and everything else, whether balance is actually something that's desirable.
Well, if I'm calling a spade, I think if you want to be successful in anything, you have to be obsessive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is, you're going to compromise other areas, whether it be your personal life. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm very kind of person, I am an obsessive person. I want to do big things for the business. And I don't see myself stopping. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why we're going to succeed, because I'm so obsessive. Mm-hmm. And I won't stop till we do. So I think it's a benefit for the business goals, but obviously it comes with consequences on your personal. So it's finding that balance.
When you said earlier as well about you want to be the best,
yeah,
in the couple of things that you were doing,
yeah,
so the laser hair removal, what were the lessons you learned there? Like, what does the best mean? How can you be the best? I suppose there's only a couple of ways you can actually take off someone's hair permanently with a laser. You know, what does the best mean to you, and what did it mean in that instance?
Well, the good question, firstly, customers. If they're saying you are the best, that's one indicator. Mm-hmm. And obviously, for me, the best is number that the customers, like if the customers are saying it, and then obviously then your market share. Mm-hmm. You know, so for me, you know, say in Ireland, we've got 70% market share. That tells me we're the leader in the market. So that's one indicator. And obviously we're constantly looking at our reviews for our patients. So we review our ratings all the time. And that's an indication if we're the best, not the best. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's certain ways how we thrive to be the best.
Have you reacted to bad reviews? I'm sure not all the reviews have been 5 stars over the year. Yeah. You know, have you learned from customer reviews and have you managed to...
100%. I think, as I always tell my team, I don't want to see the good reviews because I'm not going to learn anything from them. I want to see the bad reviews. Mm-hmm. Show me the bad. And I kind of encourage our staff to share that, you know, because like I said, this is a learning opportunity. We can learn more from our bad reviews than our good reviews. So, yeah, I love seeing bad reviews in that sense because I know we can improve them.
Was it difficult at the start not to take those bad reviews personally?
No, I don't think. Me personally, I don't get emotive. Like, you know, not everyone's going to like you. Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of understand that. But you can learn from each bad review. And so we use it as a learning opportunity.
Do you find that some staff might be wary about talking about the bad reviews if they were maybe personally responsible for something? Or
100%. People don't like to admit if they made a mistake, but it's important that we learn from these mistakes. That's how we're going to progress as people and human beings.
Can you remember anything over the last kind of 10 years or so that you've implemented, that something you've learned, maybe learned the hard way from either a bad review or something that didn't go right and you've implemented now in the business and that's something you're happy with?
We're doing it all the time, like with our tech, we're reiterating all the time. you know, every week we learn something new and we kind of make small improvements all the time. So for us, it's a constant ongoing process. We're always optimizing our business in every aspect, every week, every day, is trying to find a small improvement, a marginal gains.
So the tech side of the business, let's talk about that, because we haven't really discussed it yet. So traditionally, you've had, you know, treatments, really, you know, you've had kind of more patients, if you like, than customers and so on. How does the software and tech side of the business fit in?
Yeah, so obviously, big challenge as we scaled the business was the software out there wasn't suitable for the size of our business and for the growth we experienced, because this sector traditionally is made up of independents. It's only over the last couple of years as we started seeing kind of consolidation and the appearance of chains. So obviously there's been massive amount of private equity money going into the sector. So there's a shift happening in the sector. And obviously, as we were scaling, there was literally no software out there. We tried to implement various different parties, didn't work out. And it's actually very funny. It was actually around 2 years ago, I was reading Jeff Bezos' book on Amazon. And obviously, Jeff identified that tech was one of the key enabler. And it kind of resonated with me because I said, we're going through the challenges. We couldn't scale the way we're going with our current software. So we needed to make change. So after that, I kind of identified a CTO who I knew would be very suitable, Paddy, and brought him on board. And now we have a team of 50 developers. And we're building our own proprietary CRM and tech solutions.
So now that you're building that, what have been the challenges for you learning that business, I suppose, and learning how that operates versus, you know, what you've been in before?
Well, firstly, I've learned that tech is expensive and it's slow. So we wanted to have within a year, have our CRM built. That's not the case. It takes a lot longer. So, and kind of, it was a cultural wake up as well, because tech, the type of people in tech are kind of very different to what I kind of dealt with before. I'm obviously very used to kind of KPI deadline kind of type of people, whereas tech was, they weren't very much in that kind of deadline kind of basis. So it was a kind of cultural wake up for me. But it's a lot more expensive than you're going to think. We spend probably this year up to nearly 8 million euros in the last 2 years in tech.
Just in development.
And we still haven't got a product.
And is that, you'll test the product, I suppose, on your own business before, I suppose, bringing it to market?
Yeah, we want to use our business as a learning curve to build best in class, and then leverage off the learning from that to sell to the market.
How has that been difficult for you to spend 8 million, for example, this year on something and not really have anything yet to show for it? How do you kind of...
Well, it is a big thing, but as I said, if we want to go where we want to go, we need it. So obviously it's a big risk from a business, especially that I don't have a background from tech. So you're investing a lot of money in people that, you know, so you depend on these people to do it. So I'm not in control of their destiny. It's on these people. So that's challenging, because in other areas of business, you know, I can have a say on how the direction, whereas in tech, I don't have the same say. So that's challenging, but I really believe in the people we recruited. I really believe in our tech leadership team, and we're seeing some results already. You know, we obviously, we built certain things that we're using at the moment. There's still a lot more work to be done, but we're seeing the benefits already.
The communication must be huge in that. So your CTO being able to explain to you where they are, because it could be something, intangible, something that you can't necessarily see from the code or whatever.
Yeah. But I think the good thing what we have is, and even from our tech team, is they can leverage all the learnings from the operations. So it's very kind of unique. You know, we're building a product that we're learning from the operations. So I think that's very unique, and that's why we're very fortunate when we go to the market and sell our tech on, we've got a test case to learn from. So I think that's a massive advantage for us.
Being your own customer,
Being your own customer, you can test straight away.
So when do you think that'll be deployed? Maybe across your business?
Well, with tech, We're building new features all the time. So we've released some front of house features already. So, but by probably the next 6-7 months, we'll have our full CRM built, but then you'd be constantly developing. Mm-hmm. It's now, like, we're looking now the next 5 years. So we're planning ahead. So it's going to be constant development. So yeah, it's just trying to manage the amount of people, because as I said, I just with our tech team there, they want more people. Mm. So that's the joys of tech.
And what will the system do? So a CRM system, yep, that's going to kind of manage customers. Yep. Will customers interact with this? What kind of generally will...
Well, firstly, one of the reasons why we want to bring tech in, I want our organization to be very kind of data-driven organization and in real life data and get real life customer insights. So we want, like Amazon, they know the behavior of the customer before they do. So we want to create that behavior with ourselves. We want to know our exact behavior of our customer before they do. Mm-hmm. We want to know what our customer wants before they know. So yeah, it's kind of, that's, so for us, it's really kind of deep diving to get really data driven. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's what we're trying to do.
We have some people listening to this that might be maybe in their early 20s or something, yep, like that, and they might aspire to do something similar to what you've done. Do you have any advice for someone who might be at that stage in their life, the stage of life that you were before coming into this business? What would you focus on if you were them?
Well, firstly, what I'd say is in your 20s, be fearless. You know, you don't have much to lose. Go for it. What do you got to lose? You know, so it's not like you're in your, got a big family, a mortgage. Go for it. Take risks. Fail if you fail and just go again. So be fearless is what I kind of say. You know, everyone fails. Mm. But, you know, you pick yourself up and you go again.
And that I suppose you said earlier as well, the kind of naivety almost.
Yeah, it can be advantage. Mm. Could be advantage because, you know, if you know sometimes too much, it might stop you. Mm. So having that naivety can be an advantage when you're younger.
Were you confident in situations, maybe business meetings and things like that, when you were so much younger? Did you ever worry that you might not be taken seriously or anything at that stage?
I think at the start when I was in meetings and I was in my early 20s, and then I had people reporting me in their 40s, and I think that was a bit weird. Mm. You know, so I kind of took a while to accustom to that. Oh, are they going to take me serious? Because I'm only 22. Mm. So I think that was a challenge for me at the start. Mm. But as I said, as time evolves, as your confidence builds, you kind of forget about that.
Mm. Do you think they did take you seriously? Do you think that was, I mean, did it ever become an issue at any stage?
Well, I hope they took me serious, but you never know.
Are any of those people still with the business now?
Yeah, we have a few, yeah. So, yeah.
So it has worked out.
So, yeah, that's, they probably did take me serious now I think about it.
So you've talked about the, I suppose, your kind of grand vision. What does the next few years look like now for therapy and the rest of this?
I think for us is we're doing a massive expansion in the UK. We opened 25 stores last year. We're going to do similar this year. We're going to probably get to a couple hundred stores in the UK in the next 3 years. Obviously, America's on the horizon. We'd like to do similar. And China is another market I'm very interested in. So yeah, I'd like to get to a few thousand stores within the next couple of years. It would be the ultimate goal for the business.
Do you think it's difficult going into these markets after you had some familiarity with India? Do you think it'll be difficult entering into China? And if you were to go that way, you know, how do you think you'd kind of firstly go about it?
Well, every market you go into is going to be difficult. So I think no market's easy, because if it was easy, everyone would be doing it. So I think but for us is really doing the thorough market research. You know, having the time to do thorough research is really important. As I said, the UK, I was studying for 5 years before we kind of moved over there. So, you know, similarly, the US, we've been looking at for the last 3 years. We've done intense market research. We've been on the ground out there several times. We're continuous doing that. So it's really doing the market research and spending the time, not rushing in, and kind of, you know, back to the point, I'm very data-driven in everything in our organization. We want to know where our profile of customers are before we go in, where the locations are of our customers before we go in. So, yeah, just doing research.
Philip McLeay, thank you very much. It's been a great conversation. Is there anything else you haven't talked about that you'd like to say?
don't think so.
Honestly, it's been a great chat. Thanks, I've enjoyed it. We wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much.
This podcast is produced by JetBooks, an online bookkeeping service dedicated to giving you real-time financial information at the click of a button. Our team of qualified accountants leverage the power of cloud technology to automate your manual processes and cut the cost of your finance function in half. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a 5-star review. It really helps others to find the show. I'm your host, Connor Carney. Thanks for listening.